And you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Yes, Donna Marie. Donna Marie, yeah, go on then. Yes, thank you. Donna Marie's making coffee because she's coming in for a chat, of course, from our newsroom. But she's also launching the latest series of Ours to Protect on Highland Radio. And it's back. We'll be talking to Donna Marie in a short while about that. Also, later on in the programme, Paul McLaughlin will be in after 11 a.m. taking your garden questions. He better tell us we can put in our bedding plants now or else he's not welcome back. Because if you can't do it now, well, you might as well jack it all in. And I'm going to hopefully on the way home could call in and because I need some stuff as well. I need some compost. I need some, do you know, like not for hanging baskets, but do you know the ones that stand up vertically? What are they called? Anyway, I'm going to have to sort that out. So I'll see if I can soften him up in that regard. Any questions for Paul about what you could, should be doing? Like, what do you do in Milford, for an example, when there's a hose pipe ban and it hasn't, it's not going to rain for 3 weeks? Do you know what I mean? How do you look after your stuff? I was chatting to a guy there, actually, there was a couple of things, actually. By the way, I wanted to mention, when we were over with the housing minister, we went into the old courthouse to chat to him, had a lovely coffee there, paid for it, by the way, so this is not, it's not that I'm getting anything for free. Lovely staff there, by the way, good sense of humour and a bit of crack as well. And they've a fantastic menu there. I didn't realise that they have such a fantastic menu. And looking around the place, the prices are really, really quite good. So if you're in and around Lifford, the staff are lovely. Call in, get a coffee, sit in, take away. And there is also a great menu there too. I just thought I'd mention that. But I was talking to another guy then at the creamery, and he said, you are missing out if you're not using water butts, if you're not harvesting water yourself. Because we get so much rain, maybe we can't rely on Ishka Erin to gather it for us. But if you cut your spouting or have a bucket in under it, you can gather your water and use it this time of year when water seems to be at a premium. That has got nothing really, or maybe it's got everything to do with the fact that Paul McLaughlin, our gardening expert, is going to be in after 11 a.m. taking your gardening questions. Get them into us now, 086 60 25000. Hi Greg, I'm listening to your show regarding drivers. I do believe too many parents are making cars accessible to young drivers without them fully understanding the cost of car insurance and tax. My son wanted to drive. He saved so hard for his car and insurance, which meant less socialising at weekends until he could afford the luxury. He appreciates his car, and in his eyes, it's his lifeline to get to college and work. I could have bought him this luxury, but I made a decision not to. I agree. That's exactly what we did with poor Aaron and Lee to some extent. But Aaron saved up his own money for his car and got the black box insurance, and it was $1,500 and the car was two, I think. So he got on the road for $3,500. And with the black box then, his renewal, so it was £1,500 with provisional license, though we only had that for a couple of weeks. And then the renewal with the black box was €850. And he was still 18, second year of driving. So it is, yeah, it's still not insignificant, but he was working, working away. So I agree with you, but I wouldn't judge if you have the resources at the same time and you know you're not, you know, ruining the child in inverted commas, well then there's no harm in doing it that way either. I was coming out of Shining Lights to the Mountaintop Road. Most drivers flash and let you out. A taxi driver was behind me and got impatient. He pulled out onto the other side of the road beside me and crossed to the other side of the road. This is dangerous behaviour. Taxi drivers are supposed to be professional drivers. A caller says, I don't understand why the driving test is not a senior cycle subject in schools. That should be an opportunity to have your driving license as part of your leaving cert. Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad suggestion. I always thought we could do more in an official manner in teaching life skills, stuff like that. I know maths is important. I know English is important and other things are important, but life skills are so blooming important, aren't they? Because you come out and next thing you know, life hits you hard. The Lifford Road has still not been sorted, says the listener. The bends are still there. The only thing they did was widen it. It was nothing but an utter waste of money, believes a road-using listener. Okay, it is Thursday, which means it's jackpot day. And I know many of you are The head guide at Glenveagh National Park is Claire Bromley, and she's in with me now. Hiya, Claire.
Hello, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. I would say the park's looking just resplendent at the moment, is it?
It's absolutely stunning, yeah. Lucky as anybody that's in Glenveagh this week. It's beautiful.
And even outside of it, you know, even though I live kind of coastal, the birds and the bees are out, the wasps, the flies, all that kind of stuff. Has Glenveagh exploded into a sea of life?
It has, actually.
Or maybe it's always the case.
Well, it's always beautiful, but no, this spring it's been particularly good. The weather has been kind to us, so we're seeing lots of lovely nature and wildlife activity. You know, plenty of time this year. Lovely early sort of spring flowers, bird life, and the trees are looking a little bit further ahead than what they normally would, so it's absolutely beautiful, yeah.
Tomorrow, National Biodiversity Week starts, and of course, Glenveagh National Parks all over this. But when we say biodiversity, what do we mean?
Biodiversity is like a big word that basically just means nature. So biological diversity, all the different living things that we have all around us. So you could talk about the biodiversity of your back garden, the biodiversity in your school playground, the biodiversity of Donegal, and this festival is all about the biodiversity of Glenveagh. So it's basically all the plants and animals and all the habitats that they live in, really trying to draw people's attention to that, how important it is, how beautiful it is, and how we all need to work together to look after it.
Yeah, because we're part of that, aren't we? You know, and how we behave in and around the rest of it, the rest of nature. You know, one of the biggest threats to nature is us, really, isn't
Absolutely.
It, potentially? But we also have the power to be one of the biggest, promoters of nature.
Absolutely, yeah. A lot of people would see sort of nature as being apart from them or separate. It's something that somebody else deals with.
You walk through,
you look at it, or we think of people that work in the national park, like the scientists and the ecologists and the rangers. But actually, we are part of nature and we depend on nature for so many of the everyday things that we need. So our food, shelter, medicine, the fresh air that we breathe, the water that we depend on to live. So we are intrinsically connected to nature. So this festival is really trying to slow things down, get people to go slow and really take time to appreciate nature, and in particular to understand that the national park is an incredibly important place in the county to do that.
And we'll talk about that in a moment, but I do think we are getting a little better. You know, you are more likely now to see maybe people, an area of their property, if they're lucky enough to have land, sowing it wild, maybe not cutting the grass as early as they might in the past. You know, being conscious of the contribution of hedgerows, for an example, in harnessing nature and what have you, and even to, you know, bats in the attic, you know, contacting us saying what can we do, knowing that they're protected. Do you know that sort of way? So I think through people like yourself, Claire, there is more of awareness, but of course action is also important as well.
Absolutely, yeah, I would completely agree, Greg. I think the last couple of years, I think people in general have become a lot more tuned into nature and how we all need to work together to protect it. And I think it's terrific to see that. And what's lovely about it is everybody can play their part, no matter how large or how small, right from children and young people, you know, in schools, in your own local community, and then right up to those that are maybe working, you know, particularly on farms, in protected areas. Everybody has a part to play. So I think that's what's really important, that, you know, you don't need to be a scientist, you don't need to be just a farmer or maybe somebody working, you know, in the local authorities or state bodies. We all have a part to play. So.
And you do too, because Glenveagh National Park as well, there's always an ongoing piece of work, isn't there, to particularly harness, you know, plants, grass, I don't know, trees that are native to that area, because you can get stuff that isn't necessarily native to that area. And I'm correct in saying there's a piece of work ongoing at the moment just to enhance what you might expect there natively.
Absolutely, yeah. So the landscape that you see in Glenveagh, you could be forgiven for thinking that it's very wild, but actually the landscape there isn't so wild. It's been, you know, impacted by human beings over a long, long period of time. So yes, the valley once upon a time would have been almost completely wooded with native Irish trees. The landscape that you see today is very different, and there's a whole lot of reasons for why that is. But we have a job on our hands to try and restore and renew nature in the valley. And part of that is tackling rhododendron, which is an invasive species. We have to manage the herd of deer in the park because we really want the native woodlands to thrive once again. So you could walk through the valley and be forgiven for thinking that there aren't many trees there, but actually we're working really hard behind the scenes with our woodland management plans.
And one thing I think that's really interesting, because it shows maybe the significance but also the insignificance of us. You're just part of the latest team working on that. You know, laying the groundwork for another team that might come along. This is not something happens in a year. This is an ongoing process that, you know, no one there at the moment might see come to fruition, because it's always going to be ongoing.
It's a long-term vision. So we have a plan at the minute that is like a 100-year plan for what it would take to really see that.
How far in are we?
We're only a couple of years in.
How depressing.
But we're already working really hard. So we've been out planting trees in the park. We've been harvesting seed from the native trees. We have a whole new nursery area where we're propagating those seeds into little saplings and getting them ready to plant out. So it's massive teamwork.
It's remarkable when you think that we could be talking, you know, great-grandchildren that will actually reap the benefits of the work that's ongoing now. But that's what's required, isn't it? Because nature is not it's not fleeting. Mm-hmm. What would you pick out as some of the main focuses for the week, which runs, by the way, I should mention, throughout the week at Glenveagh starting tomorrow? So pick out some things that you think are important to mention, because there's a lot going on, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a lot, yeah. We've been absolutely overwhelmed by all the goodwill, the suggestions, and the people, the wonderful creative people that have come forward with suggestions as to what the festival should include. This is its inaugural year. We want it to be a new annual festival. Mm-hmm. So this year was always going to be a little bit of a test the water to see what would work. So there's all kinds of things happening throughout the week. There's something for schools, something for families, something for individual people. I would say all the many visitors that come into the county at this time of year will benefit from
it. They're going to happen on it, aren't they, really?
Yeah, they are. But this is very much targeted at local people. So we really wanted to do something to build connections with the local communities. So two highlights in particular are tomorrow night the festival will open. And like you say, getting that kind of commitment to a long-term sort of vision for the park, we've given tomorrow evening over to local children and young people. So the festival will be opened at 7 o'clock tomorrow night in the visitor centre. We have some musical performances, some poetry readings. There's a wonderful artist called Roisin Doherty, a lovely young woman who is totally inspired by the nature and landscape of Donegal. She's going to be exhibiting her work. And we're going to be just sort of giving that first evening over to children and young people to celebrate at the beginning. And then on Saturday night, we're doing something that's actually never been done before in Glenveagh. We're having a lovely film evening. The landscape in Glenveagh, as you know, is much loved, but it has inspired directors and filmmakers over the years for all kinds of things. So we've put together this lovely evening where there will be clips from films that have been made over the years. We're going to be talking to Crossing the Line Films, who have done lots of filming in Glenveagh, and also Paper Owl Films, who are currently working on a new children's film for the park. And we're very lucky to be having Mairead Mooney along from Alton. She's going to be providing some live music.
And is that in the centre as well?
That's in the visitor centre. And then later on, about 9 o'clock, there's a lovely festival marquee down at the head of the lake. So the plan is to head outside and go down to the marquee, and we're having sunset sessions. And that's an open call to anybody that would like to bring an instrument, bring a story, bring a song, and we're going to enjoy watching the sunset over the valley.
Lovely.
So the weather looks good.
Well, that's it. It's perfect, really, because, you know, we know in this part of the world, you can plan till you're blue in the face. One thing you can't control is the weather, and we know the weather is going to be spectacular. And that's connecting with nature as well, that event on Saturday. I mean, it all is, but particularly that feels like you're right in the moment there, aren't you?
Absolutely. I think one of the things when you're trying to, switch your phone off and just come and enjoy nature, be in the moment. Yeah. So I think one of the things about a lot of the events throughout the week, you know, you have to meet people where they're at. And if you want people to take time to notice nature and connect with nature, you've got to begin with where they are. So some people just maybe don't know an awful lot about Glenveagh and the different plants and animals. So by putting on events like this that are very connected to the arts, so using art in all its forms and music can be a lovely gateway to helping people sort of just notice nature and connect.
Exactly.
With it.
So. And it's actually reconnect, because we were once far more connected to nature and the land than we are now. You can plan what you're going to do over the course of the next week at nationalparks.ie and follow links, I presume, to get to Glenveagh National Park. Tomorrow night particularly nice for the younger people, Saturday night for everyone, I think. It sounds lovely. And then the stuff throughout the course of the week as well.
Absolutely. There's all kinds of things happening. So we have lovely art workshops. We have some storytelling sessions for schools. We're very lucky to be working in partnership with the National College of Art and Design. And we have three artists in residence who are actually living in the park now for the next 2 weeks and are going to be doing exhibitions, installations. So as people journey throughout the park, they're going to encounter all sorts of wonderful creative things that will help sort of tell the stories of the landscape. There are things from very early in the morning. So we have Angus Kennedy doing some dawn chorus walks, right up until sort of some evening events like Friday and Saturday. We have outdoor yoga to the cello. We're going to be opening a lovely big new outdoor event space in the park as well on Monday. It's called Anfosco Moor, which is the big shelter. So that'll be a really special...
That permanent?
It is a permanent feature in the park, yeah. So it's a beautiful new circular outdoor tent, for want of a better word, overlooks the lake. And we're going to be using that as like a multi-purpose venue in the park for events, for education and learning going forward. So we're opening that on Monday. We're very lucky to be having a lovely celebration for that as well. So.
Brilliant. Lots going on. Check out nationalparks.ie for more. And it's not just at Glenveagh. Right across the county, there are things happening. Biodiversityweek.ie, What's Wild along the River Deal, Be a Biodiversity Explorer at Glenveagh National Park, we mentioned that. Well, Watch Ireland, the 2025 at Inishowen Head, Explore Your Shore at Mahari Strand, and on it goes. An abundance of sea life in Donegal Bay. Bat Safari Walk at Barrackhill Town Park, Carn Donegh. So there's lots of stuff there, but sure, we have lots of stuff.
Yeah, we're very lucky. That's the wonderful thing about Donegal. The landscape here is so diverse, from our coastline to our mountains, you know, our farmland, you know, our uplands. It's just incredible. So I think that's what's wonderful. It's not just us that's talking about Biodiversity Week. It's everybody.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Okay, so just to recap, if you want to plan your trip to Glenveagh, why not? Lots of people actually haven't been there. I think sometimes people put things off and don't get around to it. Let this week be the week that you go and visit. It certainly won't be your last visit if it's your first. And it all runs from tomorrow. And also for a list of countywide events, biodiversityweek.ie. But for now, Claire Bromley, thanks so much for your time. Claire Bromley,
thank you so much, Greg.
Head guide at Glenveagh National Park. Now we are heading to Australia because a fundraiser has been set up after two Donegal men from Dunloe were seriously injured on a construction site in Perth. John Wallace and Keelan Ward are now in hospital in Australia and are said to be recovering well, but they do have a long road ahead. Carl Wallace is brother of John Wallace, as I mentioned there, one of the young lads that was injured. Carl, how are you getting on? Thanks so much for joining us.
Not a bother, Greg. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing okay. So how's John and Keelan?
The boys are doing very good in regards to the accident that they had. They're in great spirits, which is the main thing, I suppose. But look, it's like it says, they have a long road of rehab and physio work and everything else along with it ahead of them.
Do we know at this stage, Carl, what happened?
Look at it. It was just a simple accident, really. A steel beam had just collapsed and kind of knocked the two boys off two mobile scissor lifts. And just literally, as a simple equation can say, they just simply threw them like two rag dolls out of the scissor lift.
Oh, my word.
And they landed on the concrete. So, look, they're very lucky boys and unlucky in ways if you unlock it.
Yeah, and what kind of injuries do we know did they suffer?
So, there's so much to go into, but my brother John there, he's broken a vertebrae in his back, and he has 9 fractures along his spine, so they're just like small hairline fractures. He had to go under surgery for 10 hours. As for Keelan, he had 2 fractures in his jaw. He had damaged some of his teeth, a shattered kneecap, and he poor tendon in his other knee. So it's a lot of injuries.
Yeah, it's difficult. But are the medical teams hopeful now, following the operations and the work that's been done so far, that both lads hopefully will make full recoveries?
Well, that's what they're hoping. Like, obviously, it's a hard thing to tell. It's such early days here at the minute, but like, they've done X-rays, they've done scans here today. It's kind of been a busy enough day for them today. But look, they're hoping for a full recovery. Obviously, they have a lot of rehab, like I said, to do. But they're very positive that both surgeries went very well for them.
Okay, that's good. I mean, obviously, this would be a disaster if it happened on a building site in Letterkenny, but you're, you know, quite literally the other side of the world. I mean, I know there is a community there to rally around, but that sort of, I suppose for the lads, you know, as big as you can get and as strong as you can get, you want your family around you when you kind of need them. So are they coping all right with that side of things, Carl?
Yeah, they are. Look, don't get me wrong. There's nothing beats your own family at your bedside when things have gone wrong and by your side to help you. But look, we've such a great community, even out here of Irish people. Like, there's people giving up bedrooms to get their family across, you know. And look, there's I have cousins here and give them as friends, great friends. My brother has cousins like Jeannie Mac. We can't express how much luck we have over here, you know what I mean?
And do you think, Carl, is it too early to say if the lads are going to continue their recovery in Australia, because that's where they're based now, that's where they're living, or whether they intend to get well enough to travel home and continue to recoup? I presume they're going to stay in Australia, are they?
Well, their plan is, their plan is to stay, but as the surgeons did say, they want to keep a track of them here.
Yeah.
To see how they're progressing. And obviously, if there is any difficulties, they know exactly who they are, what their procedure was, and so on. But look, I would imagine they are. It's early days, like you say, but I would imagine they will stick it out.
Yeah, and you know what about, I think particularly with John's injuries, the last thing he needs is, you know, 18, 19, 20 hours on a plane, 24 hours on a plane. Now, a GoFundMe was set up and there's been an amazing response. So have the lads felt the love from back home?
Yeah, I don't think they realise how much they're loved back home. But look, there's a great community there back in Dunlow, like only for the likes of Ryan Connors there, he'd be a cousin of mine, and Leanne Green, and look, there's Mark Curran, Jason McBride, Owen Dugan, Mary Trace Keller. Like, it was their idea to come up with this. We actually didn't know what was going to happen, like how things is going to go here, you know, etc. But like, they've been great. They've contacted us there maybe 2 days ago and just says, look, we want to do something to help you. We can't get out to you, but if there was a possibility, can we just set up a GoFundMe? And maybe there is a lot of people in our community that wants to help. So, they contacted us and like we said, do what you can. If you want, these are more than welcome. So we couldn't believe when we woke up this morning here, they had over, I think it was €20,000 raised, you know, overnight for us here.
And they'll need that because, you know, obviously a short notice for family to get out there can be incredibly expensive. And also, too, the lads are off their feet now for quite some time, so they're not earning, so to speak. So I think it's brilliant that the local community and even beyond the immediate Dunlow area are able to sort of chip in and make their lives a little bit more easier at this tough time.
Yeah, like there's help coming across all over the world. Like, we've been in contact with people in Abu Dhabi that know surgeons, that's spinal surgeons that they're experts in, and you know, just helping us. Even for Keelan, there, like his knee. We were talking to a guy in Oxford that was able to help us along with his knee and got in contact with a great surgeon here in Perth. Like, there was so much great contacts, great support everywhere. Like, even people we don't even know from all across Ireland is out here in Perth just offering anything that they can to help.
Okay. Greatly. Listen, Carl, pass on our best wishes to the boys, will you?
I will, of course. Thank you very much.
All right, Greg. Take care. That's Carl Wallace, brother of John Wallace. John suffered quite severe injuries to his back. He's been through a 10-hour operation and they're optimistic of a positive recovery. Keelan Ward also suffered injuries there and he's also recovering in hospital. And there is a link to that GoFundMe page on our website. It's in the news section of the website if you want to help out there. Right, apologies for the state of that phone line. Obviously, they're on the other side of the world and in hospitals. And you know yourself, hospitals can often have dodgy connections at the best of times, but I think, really, because of all the technical stuff that is ongoing. Right, okay. Now, we are talking history with our friend, Dr. Joe Kelly. Imagine why, Dr. Joe, on Walter Gamay?
Maijin, why you good day, and Greg is the luck day stick. Good morning to yourself and all on Highland Radio. And yes, wonderful with the good weather. It puts a pip in all our steps, I think. I think everybody is enjoying the good weather.
Let's say hello to Elizabeth Patterson Bonaparte. Who is Elizabeth Patterson Bonaparte?
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. It's one of these stories that the more you read, the more you want to read more and learn more about her. Obviously, she had a Donegal connection, and we'll come to that. But she was meant to be one of the most beautiful women of her time in the world. Certainly, she was called the Belle of Baltimore in America. And there's a famous story of her marrying Jerome Bonaparte, the brother of Napoleon Bonaparte. And the whole saga of that relationship. So it's a fascinating story with Donegal connection. And she was very, very pretty. And her father was William Patterson, who came, according to Sheila Friel, has done some research in this, Milford Towards the Millennium in 1997. She published an article or a book about it, that he came from Milford, Roscarrow in Milford. And he was a very young boy when he left Ireland about 14, went to America, settled in Philadelphia. Now, this is, you're talking about 1776, and that's the time of the American War of Independence, George Washington and Jefferson and all that kind of thing. And so he'd worked in a counting house, and he was a very, very smart young man, because he realised that if he kept company with the wealthy and those that were making money, he would learn the tricks of the trade. And an accounting house is really a place where a business will count the money that they're making. So he was involved in working at that, and he saved as much as he could and watched what they were doing and how they were investing. And so he decided to invest in two ships that were going to carry arms from France to America, bringing arms for the American War of Independence against the English. And that really was the key to making him a very wealthy man. He realised they came to the West Indies with these boats, these merchant boats, and the West Indies was, so to speak, a storage place for all kind of products before they hit America. It was a kind of a halfway house between America and all the other parts of Europe that they were importing or exporting from. And he realised that the middleman could make a lot of money. So he developed and invested in shipping and bringing products to the West Indies, particularly guns and arms during the American War.
And that was very fruitful for him.
Yes, he made a terrible lot of money in that. And then he invested then in the railroads, he invested in banks. He was very, very wealthy, an extremely wealthy man. And he died a very, very, very wealthy man. And in relative terms, he probably would be considered a billionaire in today's sense.
And is Elizabeth Patterson's connection with Donegal solely through her father? Was she born outside the county, or what do we know?
She would have been born in America. He obviously, as a young boy, 14, lived there all his life. But obviously had Donegal roots with Milford. And we'd see later that Betsy actually returned to Donegal, as did some of her children. One of her children, should I say, she had one boy. And then a kind of a stepson, if that's what you could call it, but her ex-husband's child, he returned because he wanted to know about her. But that we'll talk maybe about that. But she was very, very beautiful and elegant and charming. And I think the style of the time, she was more European in the clothes she wore than maybe traditional, and would have been very much a Protestant fundamentalist. You know, the people that had moved initially to America would have been of that religion, more or less. And she would have not been so strict in the way her decorum, her dress, and she was more into, let's put it like this, she was more free with her dressing and how she wore dresses and gowns and things like that there, which was very much challenging the status quo of the time. But she was meant to be very, very equally as beautiful. And her father didn't obviously have a good relationship with her. He was meant to be a very strong character. Some would say he was, aggressive and aggressive to his wife and very controlling of his children. He made sure they were in bed before him. He was very, very strict and draconian on them. It would appear that was the way they were reared. And Betsy wasn't going, she was known as Elizabeth, but her kind of family name was Betsy. Betsy wasn't enduring any of this. She wasn't going to have any of this. And I think she saw marriage as a potential way of escaping what she saw was family life, or the prison of her youth with her father. And if she could get a nice man and get married, she would have some kind of freedom. And that's where the kind of the story takes us. So she was born in 1785. So that just gives you a context of where our historical context and time.
Just a little bit about her dad. You said that he died a very wealthy man originally from the Milford area?
Yes.
You did, okay. As was of that time, wealthy people had slaves. And I wonder, is there anything interesting in terms of his ownership? And also, I suppose, how talk to me about the slaves, because I think he was conscious of the life he was putting them through. How would you frame it, Joe?
Well, yeah, obviously he had a religious conscience to a certain degree, but he was very austere and very strict. And it's a matter of getting the balance and having compassion. So sometimes he seemed to have been very austere, particularly with his own children. But then at other times he's shown to have great compassion. So in his will, he didn't leave Betsy or Elizabeth very much money because he's seen her as being a thorn in his side all his life. Wow. I think it was £10,000 he left her in some properties. Now, that was a terrible lot of money. But at the same time, it wasn't as much as like when you're talking millions and millions of pounds, it was very, very little. And he left an illegitimate daughter, and he left her money and property and wealth as well. Again, that would maybe not have been a thing that would have been done at the time. And then you mentioned the slaves. He had in his will, specifically laid out in his will, that any of his servants that had reached the age of 30 were to be made free men and free women, which was very, maybe today we think it's mad to even have slaves, but at the time it was very progressive for even to suggest
that. But I mean, that was after he didn't need them, in inverted commas. Yeah, so yeah. I understand, but still. And I want to focus a bit more about Elizabeth, just sort of wrap things up about William, who may dip in and out of the conversation. But like you talked of him building his own wealth and being a multimillionaire and being from Milford, but living much of his life away. Is there anything around now that is because of him, a legacy of sorts?
Yeah, well, in 1827, he donated a park, Patterson Park, still there in Baltimore. There's a street named after him, Patterson Park Avenue, and there's a high school there along that road with their name as well, Patterson. So there is a continuing legacy there, obviously, but you're going back now, almost 200 years. You're talking 1827, so here we are in drawing into 2027 in that sense. But yeah, there's still a legacy. And clearly he had become a very, very wealthy man in his time. And Betsy was in the middle of all that.
And yeah. Talk to me about her and the type of her, because obviously she didn't have the benefit of her father's wealth, it would seem, unless you can add more information to that. But she was clearly moving in certain circles.
Well, first of all, she'd have been very well educated and very bright young girl. Apart from having good looks, she was very articulate, well-read. In fact, she was fluent in French. So this will lead into the Napoleon and Jerome Bonaparte. That'll lead into that because she was able to communicate in French. She had a teacher that taught her fluent French, and she was very, very capable in that. So she was obviously a very bright young woman. And she lived in a time when America was changing. See, the whole idea of independence from England and the old Ancien regime, she was of a different age, a different mindset. As maybe we would like the 1890s in Ireland, and that led into 1916. There was a generation there that weren't willing to put up with what had been there before, and they went looking for something new. That was a culture revolution in Ireland and leading into 1916. So in America, there was a revolution of independence, and it just wasn't independence in the sense of being free from England. It was independence of conscience, independence of government, independence of so many things, and the influences of other countries, not just England. And so Betsy herself loved the attire and dress and culture of Europe, and particularly France.
Okay, well, listen, she's going to be in France, and she's going to meet a certain Jerome Bonaparte after the quick break. Stay where you are. Dr. Joe's not going anywhere.
The 9 till noon show is brought to you by Letterkenny Credit Union, offering low-rate car loans with fast approval. Apply online at letterkennycu.ie or in office today.
Make great photos into beautiful gifts at McGee's Chemist Letterkenny. Different gift ideas include canvas prints, freestanding or ready-to-hang art blocks, and personalised photo books, perfect to mark any occasion. There's also jigsaws, calendars, mugs, and much more. For details, visit mcgees.ie. Turn your favourite moments into something truly special with McGee's Chemist Letterkenny.
Says, oh, Mr. Brennan, Normally, I'd wax lyrical about this kind of thing, but today, well, just listen. That's the sound of freshness, you see, because it's our lovely wrinkly wax paper that keeps the freshness in. I wish my wrinkles were a sign of freshness, says I. Brennan's. Today, spread. Today.
Just want to sort me and my friends out for a party. They only owed a few quid at first.
I have to look after my granddaughter. What will happen if I don't pay?
Thought I'd be safe at home, but they found out where I live.
Drug-related intimidation and violence can happen to anyone. There is help available. Go to driveproject.ie to find safe and confidential services and supports in your local area. Supported by the Government of Ireland.
Logan Air says, let the wee ones fly. Kids aged 11 and under go fare-free this summer. Just pay the taxes. Book by the 25th of May for travel from the 1st of June 2025. Find deals at loganair.co.uk. T's and C's apply, subject to availability. Children must travel with a full fare-paying accompanying adult.
Irish Hospice Foundation's information and support line is a confidential service, providing information, support and resources on end-of-life care, advanced care planning and palliative care. For anyone caring for someone with a life-limiting illness. Available 9am to 1pm Monday to Friday. Free phone 1800 60 70 66 or email support at hospicefoundation.ie.
Highland Radio weather updates with McElhenney's. Get set for summer with all new arrivals dropping every week from fashion to footwear and homeware to cosmetics. Discover more in-store or shop online at McElhenney's.com today.
All right, continuing dry and sunny, temperatures low teens, early 20s. So we're talking with Dr. Joe Kelly, we're talking history, and we're talking about the fascinating lady who is Elizabeth Paterson Bonaparte, and she is, or was, the daughter of Donegal man William Paterson, and he was originally from Milford, and he turned himself into a millionaire. Okay, so Napoleon Bonaparte, people are familiar with that name. So how does this lady, and I think you've kind of outlined how she ends up in Europe again, but how does she end up courting Jerome Bonaparte, brother of Napoleon? Or is he the brother of Napoleon?
Yes, you're right.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Napoleon sees his power in 1799, it's an easy date to remember, and he gets the control of France. And at that time, England and France were at war. So it was a very, very precarious time politically, and particularly for America, that were trying to stay neutral. So try to put all this in the context. So the Napoleonic Wars really lasted from 1803 to 1815, the Battle of Waterloo, and Napoleon was the person behind all that. And Jerome was his youngest brother. He was 13 years younger than Napoleon, and or sorry, 15 years younger than Napoleon. There was 13 in the family, and he considered that Jerome was very spoiled, but he got him a commission in the Navy, and he worked in the West Indies part. Martinique was the place just below Puerto Rico, and that was a French island, and they had a Navy patrol on that, protecting it from the English. And Jerome was commissioned on the ship. And one of the things that they would do if an English ship was coming too close, they would fire a shot over their bow to tell them, look, stay back. But in this instance that he did order this to be done, it hit the rigging of the English ship.
Wow, okay.
And this now was considered possibly, you know, aggression and a reason to go to war, and a very fragile situation at the moment. So they more or less got rid of Jerome, get off the boat, send him into America. They didn't know what to do with him, but apologised for what happened, but got him away from the scene as quick as possible. And it's at that stage then that he heads into America, and he's heading to meet a friend that he had known while he was patrolling in those boats, Joshua Barney, who was an American, and told him about all the beautiful women in Baltimore. So he heads to Baltimore. He loved women, and as I said, Napoleon hadn't much time for his younger brother in his way of going.
Well, with that in mind, did Napoleon have a view on his relationship with Elizabeth? And for that matter, what did William Paterson think?
Yeah, well, we don't know how they fell in love, but they met. Obviously, he met Elizabeth, and you're talking about 1803, around that time. And she was 18, he was 19, and they fell madly in love. But it wasn't with the agreement of by the father, and later we find out Napoleon, the father had great reservations, Betsy being too young. But again, Betsy was saying, I'd rather be the wife of Jerome Bonaparte for an hour than the wife of any man for a lifetime. You know, she didn't want to compromise herself. She knew what she wanted, and she wanted what she wanted, and she was going to get it. And she more or less caused a split in her family. Her mother and mother's family supported her, but William was very, very concerned. This young Jerome was maybe of easy virtue and not of high, well, his behaviour maybe left a lot to be desired.
He was shifting and drifting around Baltimore. That's the problem.
And he asked a few times for her hand, and the father said no. Those were the so he headed off then to Philadelphia for a while, but he came back again wanting to marry her, and it was no all the time. Now at this time, it caused a little bit of difficulty for America. If they would sanction this marriage, where was this putting America in relation to England and France in the war? Because this was a diplomatic.
So it was
question.
Feeling into the geopolitical situation of the time.
Yeah. And so. The father had got a letter, an anonymous letter about Jerome's behaviour while he was in Philadelphia, which wasn't too good. But the marriage went ahead. It was cancelled when he got the letter. He said, no, I'm not having any of this. It was to be in November. But they got married then on Christmas Eve, 1803. And they would have been a Protestant connection and tradition, but she became a Catholic and they had a Catholic marriage. So how does Bonaparte, Napoleon, find out about this? Well, he doesn't get it directly. The news spreads to London, and then the papers from London then get to Paris, and eventually finds out that his young brother has married, and he is livid. He's no way in support of it at all. It's misalliance is the French word, wrong, and alliance, a wrong alliance, and he does everything to stop it and try to annul it.
How far did he go in his attempts to have it annulled?
Oh, he went a long way. He got in touch with the French General Council in America, and more or less told him, "You go to my brother, and tell him that this marriage is null, and also to make that very clear with the Pattersons."
Is there some rumours he also took it up as high as the Pope?
Oh, he did. He did go to the Pope, Pius the Seventh. He did go there, and when he wouldn't acknowledge, he says, no, this is a valid marriage. It's been done, and he refused. So he went to the local parish church to have it annulled. But there was more to it than this. In America, the law is that you must be 21 to get married. Uh-huh. Jerome had lied that he was 21, that he had reached the age of consent. But Napoleon brought in a law that stated that you must be 25. So in French law, they weren't married, and they weren't even married legally in America.
So we only have about 3 or 4 minutes at this. So with everything that's going on, were they able to travel back, Jerome and Betty, to France? And if so, what was Napoleon's reaction or the French reaction?
Napoleon tried to communicate with her. Look, I'll give you an endowment. I'll give you a pension every year if you give back the name and step back, and this marriage isn't valid. And a few times they tried to get a ship to go back to France, but the Americans wouldn't carry them because of the geopolitical situation at the time. But William Patterson eventually hired a ship called the Erin, which is quite ironic, the Erin being the name for Ireland. They sailed to Lisbon, to Portugal, and they were instructed all along the coast of Europe. Napoleon had instructed that she was not to be allowed onto the soil of Europe, and she wasn't. And he went to Rome, Napoleon summons him to Rome, but wouldn't meet him, told him to write to him. And Napoleon wrote back then to his brother while he was in Rome, refusing to meet him, saying, look, this marriage is over. If you don't do what you're told, then I will cut all your wealth, your funds, etc. So Betsy, in the meantime, has to get on the boat and sails to into Holland. But again, she's refused to land there. Eventually, she's taken to England. And they give her a welcome, knowing what's happening and the whole geopolitical thing. And believe it or believe it not, she had been pregnant at this stage, and then she gives birth to a son. So that was Beau.
Does this mean then for Jerome and Betty's relationship?
Well,
he's in Rome, she's in England.
Yes, and you see in the letters that he eventually just signs it, Jerome. He doesn't with love or anything. So the relationship breaks up, and Jerome then ends up marrying this woman. She's a young girl in what would be Westphalia, would be like the Belgium area, and he becomes the king of Westphalia on the condition that he gives up his relationship, his marriage, which he does.
That's remarkable that it was so important to Napoleon. So she's effectively then, and the marriage is annulled, so she's a single mother in her 20s, yes, living 20, in England, yeah. I presume, at this stage. What happened to her?
Well, so what was her husband, Jerome, wants to have the son with him in Westphalia, and she refuses that. And he offers her 100,000 a year of an income, and she refuses that because Napoleon had offered her 14,000, and she accepted that. And she said, and she seemed to have a better respect for Napoleon than Jerome, because she says, I prefer to shelter under the wings of an eagle rather than be suspended on the bill of a goose. So wow. That's what she thought of Jerome, a bit of a goose. And they did actually meet once at a distance.
I thought you were going to say at a disco. At a distance, yeah.
An art gallery or something. And Jerome said to his new wife, there's my American wife over there. But they never talked. Aww. Very sad. But look, she had to build her life together, pull it together again. And she filed for a divorce herself in America in 1812. Numerous men pursued her. We could talk about that for a long time. But she didn't engage in any of those.
She seemed to be really, really principled. And when she lost Jerome and he turned his back on her, I don't know if she never recovered from that or she never wanted to engage with another man again. So in the last minute, we do have the family line then. We have Elizabeth and Jerome and their son. Can that be traced? What do we know?
Well, we know that, for example, that her Beau died, predeceased her. She died in 1879. Beau died, her son, in 1870. But she had him classically educated. She went back to Europe. And after Napoleon fell in the Battle of Waterloo in 1815, you know, she kept coming, and she loved the culture, the heritage, the music, the dance. As I said, she was a fluent French speaker. But her grandson, Charles Joseph Bonaparte, was later to be the US Secretary of State for Teddy Roosevelt, and was the man that founded the FBI.
And do we know if anyone came back to Donegal thereafter? Elizabeth, their son?
Betsy came back herself, and Beau seemingly came, and then her Jerome's son, who later became the president of America after Napoleon's time, he actually came back and came to Donegal. He wanted to see where his dad's first wife's home was. Wow. So obviously he had a great respect for her as well. A wonderful, wonderful woman. A very sad story. There's five diaries that survived that she had kept about her finances and some notes about her whole personal relationship. But it was very, very sad. And you know,